Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Real Talks. I'm your host, David Steele, and I have a special guest today. So, special guest, let's introduce yourself to everybody, please.
Hi, I'm Tyler Cobaugh. I've been a good friend of David's for the last couple months, and it's been nice. Glad to have me on. Thank you.
Thank you. So, the reason why I'm bringing Tyler on is because we have a new juicy development in the whole Alec Baldwin Rust situation, and Tyler is privileged enough to work in the industry, and I wanted to actually have a little bit of insight onto what goes on a set and how this could have happened and maybe change in the future. So anyways, once again, welcome. And so so first and foremost, tell everybody, give us a little bit of background on what you do, Tyler, and how long you've been doing it and all that good stuff.
Of course. So I have been working in Atlanta for the last 6 years. March 17th, it will be my 6 years working in the film industry. And what I do on set is I am a production assistant. So I work with what is called an assistant director team. Assistant directors are literally right underneath the DP and the director. And the first AD is right underneath the director and DP, first AD, first assistant director. Then there are second assistant directors. And then there's a second AD who really is helping with the logistics behind the scenes about scheduling and everything else and working on the call sheet, which is what everybody gets at the end of the day. And me, we're below the second AD and the second. And what we do is basically, if they, whatever needs to get done on set, we're there to help facilitate and help out. So a lot of what we do is help out with what we call lockups. So we are making sure, that if we're filming, say, in this room that I'm in, we would have somebody on the edge of camera that way, making sure people aren't walking in, and on the camera that way, making sure people aren't walking in frame. And we're also there to make sure that people are aware of what is going on. And that will come into play when we start talking about the Rust incident, because it was a failure. There's fail safes. There are multiple fail safes on set that prevent what happened to Elena and what happened to the director and the what happened to the director and what happened to Elena. There are there are multiple fail safes on set that prevent that very incident from happening. So, yeah, I basically help out with whatever needs to help out. And I'm also there for safety as well, to make sure people are aware of what's going on.
And that's the most important thing. So when they're on shoots, we have, I mean, listen, we always hear about these shoots and these accidents that occur, and there are things that happen. But that's why we have stunt coordinators that we have. I mean, just one that was introduced, you know, a couple of years ago was an intimacy, you know, coordinator and everything else. So this kind of incident, now, there were a lot of factors that went into this. Okay. First and foremost, this was a low budget production. Okay. And so that being said, it was more of a, you know, cutting corners type of thing. And so at that point, what ends up happening is when you have a low budget production, okay, and you're trying to cut corners and you're trying to do this and you're trying to do that, mistakes are made. And when mistakes are made, then it's, okay, how do we correct them? I mean, listen, we have always heard about big budget accidents, right? We've heard of like Letitia Wright getting injured in Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. You know, when Tom Cruise broke his ankle in Mission Impossible, those things happen. But when somebody dies on set, and that's what I'm going to get to in a couple minutes, it's really a for lack of a better word, a tragedy. So this all started, and so let me digress. So this started back, started about over a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so what ended up happening was Alec Baldwin, whom we all, you know and love from, like, you know, Saturday Night Live and 30 Rock and everything else. He was supposed to be in a Western. And this Western was supposed to be called Rust. And there are, you know, in any Western, okay, that I've ever seen, there are guns. Now, there is something called an armory. Now, this armory is basically there to ensure that it's a safety protocol. And then you have a fail-safe and everything else. So what ended up happening to Alec Baldwin was there were live rounds. Somehow live rounds ended up getting on this set. And when this happened, nobody checked and nobody did what they had to do. And so what ended up happening was there was somebody that died on the set. And the gun discharged and it killed one of the crew, and it directed and injured the director as well. Now, you know, so five live rounds were mixed in with the dummy rounds. And so there was a huge investigation. OSHA, New Mexico OSHA came in. They are the occupational safety hazard, you know, for the state. And so what ended up happening was there weren't any criminal charges filed until now. So yesterday, okay, Alec Baldwin and mainly Alec Baldwin, we're just going to say Alec Baldwin in general, was charged with involuntary manslaughter. And so this leads to a bunch of questions. Number one, how does this happen? Number two, what could be prevented from this happening again? And number three, how does this change cinema? And how does this change movies? So this is why we brought Tyler on, for his expertise. So Tyler, number one, do you think there should have been charges levied against Alec Baldwin? Number two, how do we change this moving forward? And number three, do you think this could actually change the way we look at cinema today?
So, yes, I do think I think they made the right decision, because incompetence goes a long way. And the armorer, that's what they're called, armorers, who are the ones that handle the gun and make sure it's cleared, like they clear it, making sure it's cleared after they go and shoot a gun and they hand it off after a scene is over. They're the ones that go and clear the gun and make sure the gun is safe. And yeah, I really do think. And I think I also heard that there might be charges brought up against the armorer as well in this incident. And what was the second question, David?
So, basically, now that this has happened, how do you think this is going to change cinema or movies moving forward?
Here's the thing. This is so the only other time that this has happened, I believe, and I've talked to my armor friends as well about this, was the David Lee incident on the Crow set. And that set the precedent for what we are in today with regards to on-set safety with guns. And the thing about that was, it is a 1 in a million chance. Now, that's not maybe the correct, like, percentage, but this never happens on set. Never. Because of the fact we have rules that prevent this from happening. it will change things. I think there will be times when we will go to just using plastic or rubber guns. And I was talking to one of my director friends about this as well, and he told me that a lot of the times that he does any of that, what they would do is they would load up a green screen and they would shoot against the green screen and not at anybody. So there are ways that they on set that they make it safe. And I think the biggest part about this will be the incompetence of those involved, because somebody didn't do their job. And literally, when I'm on set, the armorer and the second unit coordinator, whoever's part of that scene, will say, if anybody wants to take a look at this gun and make sure it is it's checked, please come and do so. Anybody can do that. And it's a lot of incompetence, unfortunately, that happened here. And I was literally, as I said, I was talking to my director friend who was telling me about the different things that he has done in the past with guns to film guns. There's ways to do it. And he was telling me, he said the same thing. He's like, yes, he should be charged, because you as an actor are responsible. The guns that we use on set are actual guns. They have a filed clip. They have a filed firing charge, and they're using blanks. But they are, and always, everybody on set sees that weapon as a live rubber.
So, question. I mean, let's face it. This is a low-budget production, okay? So this isn't like a Mission Impossible where they're spending $250 million and everything else. I guess the question is this, at the end of the day, from where I'm looking at it, they found live rounds on the set. Now, live rounds are a complete no-no. I think what you've got to ask is, how do live rounds get on the set? Because that is, to me, you have to figure out who brought the live rounds on the set. And that person should never work again, period. Because they've proven that they can endanger anybody's life that is using a gun. That being said, do you think that moving forward, do you think this is going to change how we view movies?
I don't think it will. There's always the question of on-set safety and the working hours that we have to do. I work, no joke, the most I've ever worked on one day on a TV show was 18 and a half hours. And there's always, and I think you're going to start to see a shifting of the tide. There needs to be more of a focus on on-set safety. And yeah, you don't ever see this happen. Never. You never see this happen. The only other time that this has happened was, as I said, on The Crow in 1994. And then on-set safety rules were changed for that. Now, I don't know what the new changes could be, but no, I don't think it's going to change how we view cinema. But I think even for me, it's like, okay, like anybody could have been the one to check that weapon. Anybody could have been the one to check that weapon. And also, I've been talking to a lot of my second assistant director friends. And I think what is missing from this narrative is the culpability of the first assistant director who was on set. Because he should have been the one, too, as well, to check and make sure that there wasn't anything in the barrel, if there wasn't any live rounds on set, that should have been it. He should have been, the buck stops with him, ultimately, too. And as I said, there are multiple fail safes. There's no new rule. I think there will be more of a tightening of the rules, but 99.99% of the people that I know that work on film sets, mind you, these are mostly majority, as I said, 99.9% of the ones that I work on are union productions. That's also a thing that we also got to have. We got to keep in mind is when you're non-union, the rules get bent in a way that can be very dangerous. Now, I've heard stories about this production company where they have put crew in really dicey situations, even on a film right before this one was shooting. And I think there needs to be a focus on that part of it as well. Because none of my friends, none of the people that I have worked with I've never felt unsafe working on a set, being by a set when they're doing the second unit where they're shooting guns and doing all that. And I think that's a big part of it as well, is I've never felt unsafe on set. So,
yeah, no, I think there's a lot of culpability to go around here. I think there's a lot of culpability. I think you're right. The first AD has some, you know, I think, you know, obviously the armor, you know, the person who's handling this, I think that, and you're right about another thing too, Tyler. This is a freak thing. I mean, and as I said before, there have been accidents, whether it's The Crow with Brandon Lee, whether it's, you know, Letitia Wright, you know, even though, you know, she didn't die, it was a serious, serious tragedy, or, you know, event. I'm thinking of the helicopter crash for The Twilight Zone back in, I think, like 1981, in that movie. I mean, these are, unfortunately, what ends up happening is this is what the film is remembered by. Now, how they ended up resolving all of this, and okay, so,
yeah.
A couple other questions. Number one, what did you think about the husband becoming an EP on the movie? Because did you think that was a little like, okay, we're going to throw you a bone type of thing? Or was it because some EPs, and by the way, an EP is an executive producer, they don't do anything. They're just there. Others on a major crew have... they have something to do. So what did you think about the decision to make him an EP? And moving forward, how do you think this never happens again?
So I think it's a very interesting move that they made him an executive producer on this movie. I do think I can't put myself in the mindset of the husband, because it's unfathomable that you're working on a make-believe movie and your wife doesn't come home from that. I do think that it is a way to kind of like try and put it under the rug a little bit. And I do think it's a good thing that he's going to get maybe some financial compensation from being an executive producer on this movie. And how it never happens again is follow the effing rules and hire competent people who understand and respect a firearm, and don't get lazy around a firearm. I think maybe that could have been what happened with Baldwin, is he didn't check the gun. That's what's been reported. He didn't check the gun. And he, you know, I get it that you want to trust the people that you have around you. But as Ronald Reagan said, trust but verify. He didn't verify the fact that there was something maybe stuck in the gun or it had live ammunition in it. And that is a big problem from this. How does it... I think there can be a tightening of the rules to make it more safe. But as I said, the rules have worked up until this point. It's not a repeated problem. And as I said, I think maybe there should be a focus maybe on these non-union shows or more lower budget tier. Like, there are different tiers for films, and this could be like a tier 3, which is a way low budget, but still, I think it was maybe still under SAG. So there needs to be more oversight on those way low budget films, I think.
Yeah.
You don't see this happen. As I said, there's never been a time that I have ever felt like any of the team that I've been a part of has ever put me in harm's way. Now, things go wrong on set. And that's why I always have my head on a swivel. You're always listening to your radio to make sure, hey, what's going on, like, to be in the loop and to make sure people are aware. Now, there are some things that you cannot control, but yeah, I see the tightening of the rules, and I think there should be a better look at some maybe the lower budget films, because if they cut corners, that's when people die. And I hope there are producers out there that are doing these the kinds of films that see that and be like, well, you know, even if they are like, they don't care about their crew or they don't care about the process, nobody wants to fucking have another like lawsuit like this on their hands. So maybe that will be an incentive for them to actually give a damn about crew members on their sets.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think the fact is that when you bring him on as an EP, okay, fine. It is what it is. I mean, at the end of the day, there's a couple of things here. Number one, we can all agree it's a tragedy. Number two, the only thing to do is educate. And number three, you know, we just, you know, I hate to say it, but as you alluded to earlier, this is a once in a million thing. These things don't happen on big budget sets. You know, it's one of those things where they're going to finish this, but there's always going to be that mar over it. There's always going to be that gray cloud over it.
I do think that they shouldn't finish it. I don't think they should finish it, though. I don't think that. I think that's a big problem. I think all right. So there is a movement going around right now on Atlanta sets that if you go with these producers, you could get blacklisted and from your union if you go with these producers and do that. There's a lot of talk that if you do join these guys on any of their films, there is a big possibility if you're found out that you're on that crew. The unions and the union members are pushing that forward, that if that happens, you could be blackballed from the industry and blackballed in the union itself, and nobody would want to work with you. Wow. So that's also something too that I think is a great precedent to set, that it's not about the money. Like, you should give a damn about your fellow crew members' lives. And I do think it's a bad idea for them to come back and keep finishing this. Now, everybody says, oh, come back. You know, there's all those stories of crew members that have died, and everybody's like, we got to finish this. We got to finish this for so-and-so. But for the mental health of the crew, I don't know who is going to want to touch this because it is quote unquote cursed, quote unquote.
Yeah. Like, you know, I'm going to compare it to something. What you were just talking about psychological, I'm going to compare it to the, what happened with, on the Bills game the other night.
Yeah.
When that player, you know, he fell down to the turf. And so we had to, you know, the players were like, come out, come out, come out. And so what ended up happening was, and thank God he's okay. You know, that was the NFL's worst nightmare. And they didn't know what they were going to do. And so, but to your point, Tyler, psychologically, nobody wanted to go play football. I mean, it's not like this is week one and, you know, I mean, I'm not saying the time would have mattered, but it mattered more. Anybody who's a sports fan knows football and everything else. But they were psychologically not prepared to go back on the field. And so, you know, all we can do is move forward. And by the way, this saga is not over, guys. So let's keep that in mind. He just got charged today or yesterday. I mean, look, at the end of the day, he's probably going to get a slap on the wrist and he's going to be fine. But I think the director and a couple other of, you know, people, they're probably never going to work in the industry again. So, so moving forward, let's move on to something a little more cheerier. And that is the brand new show that just came out, The Last of Us. And The Last of Us is, I mean, so if you haven't joined already, as I'm going to say it now, like and subscribe. Tyler, myself, Kyle, and we're going to have Destiny Jackson from Deadline. Every Sunday after the episode, we are going to be live streaming our thoughts and our opinions and critique the episode. Last week didn't go so well. We got it recorded, but the video, okay. So nonetheless, the big story was this, that in the first, and Kyle and I were having a little back and forth, and I was right about this, but he was right about something else about it. So HBO Max did crash. And what ended up happening was they had almost 3 million people watching the first night. Now, within the first 2 days, they have had 10 million people watch this. So, I mean, you know, this is going to be huge. Number one, are you excited for the episode coming up? I mean, I can kind of think you are. But moreover than that, Tyler, like, what are you looking for? Let me ask you this question. What are you looking forward to the most?
I want to get deeper into this. As I said, I've never played the game all the way through at all. I played the beginning, literally the beginning of it. So I don't know what to freaking expect. I want to see the craziness, the carnage, the insanity of this new world that has befallen the whole world. Like, I think there is... I think it's going to be insane and amazing to see what happens next. And it's a beautiful thing that we're in a new age. I think this is, I said it before, that I think this is going to become one of the biggest shows of the 21st century. And I think people are going to be looking back at this as the point of a huge boom. And hopefully that huge boom is great video game adaptations, but also other streaming services upping the ante when it comes to rich storytelling. I think that's going to be the biggest thing. And I'm ecstatic. Like, the first episode is amazing. Now, I've only watched it once, but I think today I'm going to watch it a couple more times and dissect it a little bit more. But still, it is, I'm still thinking about it. Even freaking 5 days ago, and I'm still in awe of the performances, the acting, the way that it was written. It's a masterpiece. And I've seen that so much on like TikTok of gamers who fell in love with the game 10 years ago and are, and there are people that are saying, I played the game, but I was still captivated and glued to the screen. And I knew what was going to happen. And I think what's going to be really interesting is where they deviate in the story and how they make it even more fresh and add to the canon that is already there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is going to be, this is going to be huge. I mean, it's already basically said that it's going to be huge. And, you know, I can't wait for Sunday. I'm just like, and we're only one episode in, guys. That's the thing. It's not like this is, you know, a 5 or 6 episode series. No, this is 9 episodes. And this one's going to be an hour. And I can't wait. I mean, so let me ask you this. What did you think about the viewership? Because that was a big thing. Like, we only had, I say only, I mean, it was the second highest rated opening night, you know, if you will, behind House of the Dragon, ironically. So what did you think about, I mean, you had almost 7 million people watch this in 2 days.
It was a 10
million. Was that because people said, oh, I think HBO is going to crash? Or is it because, you know, I'll see it the next day? Or is it they were absolutely looking forward to it, but just didn't, they just never got around to it? So what do you think that was attributed to?
I think it didn't help that there was a big NFL game going on at the same time that was coming out. I think that was a big part of it. Now, I think the story that's amazing is, I think, I forget who reported it, but it was over 10 million views in 2 days, in the first 2 days. That's insane. And I wouldn't be surprised if the second day had even more viewership than the first day. And it blew me away with that. And I wouldn't be surprised if we maybe even see more of an uptick for episode 2's premiere. And I don't know what to attribute it to with that. I think it was a lot of factors. You know, people want to know, and I think there are some that want to hear how it actually is from people before they watch it. So maybe that could have bit into the numbers a little bit. And that's what, I mean, I think that's a story to follow here, is 10 million, almost 10 million views in 2 days. That's a great thing. And I think HBO is beyond ecstatic for what is going to come. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if you start to see even more viewership the next week, because you're having a week of people to follow up and watch it again. And I think you might even see more of an up. I think you might not see a drop in viewership, but I think you're going to see more and more and more and more people watch it and get glued to it for the next 8 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it's one of those things where, look, there are some television shows that don't even get 10 million people. They can't even get 5 million people. So, I mean, the fact is that when you're having that kind of viewership. And, you know, I think you attributed to a couple of things. Number one, there was a major NFL game going on. Number two, there was, you know, you had the backing of, let's say, an HBO, which, I mean, really, they did a phenomenal job with it. I can't wait for episode two. Moreover than that, I think you're really going to see the uptick, to your point. I really think you're going to see the uptick after the playoffs are over. I think once the playoffs are over, you're going to see a major, major uptick. And it's just...
when does it end?
You know, so it ends. Ending? It ends in March. It ends in March. And so
it doesn't help that a lot. It doesn't help that the next few weeks are going to be playoff game after playoff game. Yeah, so up until that, and that is going to eat into it. But I don't think it's going to do much damage. Now, the Super Bowl, that could be a big day where it could.
Well,
because I mean, the Bengals could be in the Super Bowl.
Well,
that could be, and Bengals fans and whoever's playing the Bengals, which it could be the Chiefs. I don't know who it could be, but that could be an issue. That could be a real issue. But I think this is going to be a juggernaut in the ratings, and I wouldn't be surprised if we start hearing more about what the future.
Yeah. So, guys, stay tuned on the channel. This Sunday, we will be doing, as I said, a live stream right after the show, maybe 5-10 minutes after the show. It will be Tyler. It will be myself. It will be Kyle. It will be Destiny from Deadline, one of the major trades in Hollywood. We're all going to be sitting down and talking about that particular. It's the episode name is called Infected. So we will be talking about that, and it's going to be a blast. I can't wait for it because it's, I mean, just the possibility and the potential here is endless. So that's pretty big, but we also have something else that's really big that came out today. And so we move from one big thing to another big thing that's pretty current. So anybody who's a movie fan and knows that there are a multitude of different awards out there. You've got the SAGs. You've got, you know, the Golden Globes. You've got everything. Well, the BAFTAs. The BAFTA is one of those awards. It's not as, I won't say, popular, because it is on the other side of the pond, British, you know, Academy of Film and Television Association, but they do nominate films. And so I want to run through a couple of these different nominations with you, Tyler, and see, get your impressions of it. So we're not going to do all of them, but I thought we'd do a couple of, you know, big ones. So we're going to start out with Best Director. Okay. So Best Director, you have Edward Berger for All Quiet on the Western Front, Banshees of Inisherin, Martin McDonagh, Decision to Leave, Park Chan-wook, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Daniels, and Tar, Todd Field. And we had The Woman King. We had The Woman King. Okay. And so those were the six. Now, it's interesting because, let's face it, there's a couple of names, or one name, that's really missing. And the film's done pretty well overall. And that's Steven Spielberg. So let me ask you this. Number one, how much weight do you put into these nominations? And two, do you think they made the right decision in nominating these six people?
So here's the way I would say it is. My mentor, he worked on The Fabelmans. So I have skin in the game when it comes to that, because I can't wait. He's going to be at the DGA Awards. And, you know, if he gets to win this award, it's going to be a phenomenal night. Now, I like who they picked. I don't think it's going to have that much of a big impact on the Oscar voters, because I think the Oscar voters are going to vote for whoever the hell they want to win and whoever they think is worthy. Now, the three that I'm most excited for out of this is Decision to Leave, which is absolutely phenomenal. It was only in theaters for a short time, and I saw it here in Atlanta, and it blew me away. So I'm excited for that. I'm excited for Banshees, and I'm excited for Everything Everywhere All at Once, and also All Quiet on the Western Front. I think it's a different grouping, but it's an exciting thing. I'd be excited if any of them won, because they're all phenomenal picks. Like, there's not a lackluster pick in this group at all. And that's very exciting to see.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I mean, I think that, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, because look, let's be honest. There are some films out there that just is not getting the love that they should. I mean, I think that the three films that really, or four films that is in everybody's nominations, is Everything Everywhere All at Once, Banshees, Tar, and The Fabelmans. Those are the four that, I mean, universally, if you've gone and looked at all the nominations, whether it's SAG, whether it's Golden Globes, DGA, PGA, BAFTAs, they're pretty much, okay, they're pretty much, those four films are in everybody's nominations. Now, it's going to vary a little bit. You know, you have Gina Prince Bythewood that's in for The Woman King, whereas, you know, there are some other organizations that wouldn't have done it. I really, you know, I hope we continue the trend of, you know, nominating a woman director because the film is good, not because of, and guys, there is a difference. I want to make that perfectly clear, okay? There is a difference between nominating a film that is a great film and nominating a film directed by a woman because she's a woman. I don't want that. I want it because she's a great director. So that being said, I was glad to see her finally get some love. So let's go ahead. Go ahead.
I think also, I just thought about this. I think it's a very interesting choice for them to nominate All Quiet on the Western Front, because that film right now, when it came out in this time, is hitting very close to home with the war going on in Ukraine right now, with Ukrainian and Russian soldiers fighting trench to trench. I think that's a beautiful thing that they're nominating a film about a war that was supposed to end all wars. So, honestly, I'll say this as well. I think it should get more love. I think All Quiet should get more love, because unfortunately, I haven't seen it yet, and I will. But even my brother saw it, and he said it was beautiful, haunting, disturbing, but an amazing, amazing film. So I'm glad, you know, I'm glad. And honestly, too, I'm a huge Top Gun Maverick fan. So that, missing that, kind of hurt a little bit, but I don't think they made any wrong choices here at all.
Yeah. Yeah. So I agree with you. If All Quiet does end up getting in, it will probably be a 9 or a 10 for the Academy Awards, which isn't a bad thing. I still want to see it nominated. So let's move on to original screenplay real quick. So you have The Banshees, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Fabelmans, Tar, Triangle of Sadness. Now, let me ask you, this is original screenplay. So there's a difference between original and adapted. We'll get to adapted here in a minute. What do you think about these? Did they make a mistake? I mean, is it pretty status quo?
It's pretty status quo. I do find it very funny and great that they nominated Everything Everywhere All at Once, considering how just off the wall it is. And honestly, I think it's the most original screenplay that they have in that list. It's the most far out and the most creative when it comes to the story itself. I think it's a great thing to honor a man who's done so much for cinema itself with nominating The Fabelmans, which was written by Spielberg and Kushner. I love this list, and Banshees is heartbreaking but yet poetic. I love these choices. Yes, I love them.
Yeah, I think that, to your point, I think it's pretty status quo. I mean, Triangle of Sadness, I will say one thing. Triangle of Sadness has not, and look, just because it doesn't appear everywhere doesn't mean it's a bad film. The elements got that perfectly clear. I think that that's probably the one that people, if you went up to 10 film critics and said, okay, which one of these would you eliminate? They'd probably take out Triangle of Sadness.
So I'll share a personal story about Triangle of Sadness. One of the first sets I ever worked on, it was my biggest stint up until that point in 2017. I worked on Black Lightning, which was a CW show. And Charl B. Dean, she was one of the actresses on the show. She played one of the henchmen of one of the main villains. And she was the actress who passed away from Triangle of Sadness. So she was on one of my first ever movie sets. And when I heard she passed, I'm like, I know that face. I know that face. And I knew the name, and I was trying to figure out why. And I literally pulled up my first call sheet when I did my month on Black Lightning. And she was the first. She was on that call sheet, so I wanted to share that. And I think it's good to see a film like that. There, it's outrageous too, and it's original. So yeah, I don't think that there's one on that list that doesn't deserve to get nominated or win it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that, you know, it's probably another one of those films that just is not getting the love that it should. Okay. Let's move to adapted screenplay. This one is always interesting. So we have All Quiet on the Western Front, Living, The Quiet Girl, She Said, and The Whale. So of those five, I mean, once again, and it looks like All Quiet did really, really well, which is good to see. So do you think that they, you know, what were your thoughts about how they did the adapted screenplay?
Now, for me, I saw Living at Sundance. I'm just forgetting that. And that is, I cried. I bawled my eyes out watching it. So, and She Said is a very damning film about, you know, the Harvey Weinstein story breaking and the women reporters who brought that to light and were able to get it to the finish line and actually published. And All Quiet on the Western Front is, I think, it's literature that is considered one of the best books in one of the greatest books in history. So I think they nailed it. And for me, those are the three that are the strongest out of them. I have never seen The Whale, and I've never seen The Quiet Girl, but I think they made a great – I think they picked the right ones. And, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think that – I mean, I haven't seen The Whale either, and I absolutely want to. To your point, She Said is just, you know, it's one of those films that – you know, and it's always going to be compared to like Spotlight or The Post or All the President's Men. But it was really, really good. You know, I think the other thing why it didn't do so well, I think there's a couple reasons. Number one, it was, it's a niche type of film. Okay. It's a niche type of film. So it, let's face it, unless you are in Hollywood or you're around Hollywood or whatever, like yourself, or you know stories, it's very hard to get a grasp on it, okay? Because it is one man and it's doing this and everything else. The other thing, too, is if you look at what was going on in out at that time, there were a lot of good movies around. And that was probably one of the things that made that film suffer. Now, it shouldn't have suffered the way it did. It didn't even make $3 million take home. But I'll say this. I love the film. I love the film. I did a double feature. And, yeah, I loved it. So,
and here's what I'll say about that is, and I was thinking about that as we started talking about this, is I think it'd be a very... I think it would be a revolutionary thing and a very damning thing for the BAFTAs to vote and to have She Said When, because that is another side of this industry damning Hollywood for its complicity in Harvey and what he did. I think that would be a beautiful thing for She Said to win Best Adapted Screenplay, because that would be a damning condemnation of what Harvey did and vilify the women who helped bring this to light, because they suffered after they did all this. You know, it was, you know, the scrutiny and everything else that came on these women after the story came out, I think that's a big deal too. And I think it would be a big, I think it'd be a big thing to see that film win, because Harvey's ultimately going to die in prison. And it's because of those women coming out and saying and telling their truths that was it. But I think She Said could be the final nail in Harvey's coffin.
Yeah.
Which I think is a beautiful, as I said, as we were talking about this, I'm like, you know what? That's a beautiful thing. And I would be so happy to see that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a fantastic movie, and you know, it's kind of sad in the simple respect that all of the cast or all of the crew that worked so hard on that film. You know, I mean, you're a PA, you've been in the business for quite a long time, and you know, you guys, PAs and everything else, bust their asses 12, 13, 14 hours a day. And unfortunately, and that goes into a whole other argument for another time, but this is why the Oscars don't do well. And it's because that 2/3 of the awards are below what's called below the line. Okay. And that's, you know, cinematography, editing, sound, visual effects, and it runs the gamut. Everything you don't see on screen, okay? What he does, what everybody else does, okay? But the only people that really get the credit for this are the directors, the actors, the actresses. That's it.
Now,
and
I will say this, though. I think we need to set a new precedent that slowly is starting to happen. And that is when they win these awards, Spielberg shouting out the PAs that worked on The Fabelmans, because he himself was John Cassavetes' production assistant when he started out. I think if I was on a film and I was a PA on an Oscar-worthy film and it won, that's the recognition that I would want to see, because we are not going to get the awards. But if we have our names or our group shouted out on the national stage like that, that's enough praise for me at the moment. And I think that should be the new precedent set, is show some appreciation and respect for the people that are there probably well after the director leaves and are there 2 hours maybe before the director even gets to set and crew get to set. So I think that's where that can change. We need more directors to be like that. And I think as well, if you're a director that doesn't respect your PAs and crew, I think that should follow you. And I don't think that that's a kind of badge of honor that you want, because it, even in the public eye, it could look very bad on you to be that kind of person, even if you're the most amazing director of all time.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, because it's, and I'm not saying that you are, or I'm just going to use the term, because PAs, essentially, they're grunts.
Yep. Oh, and yeah. Oh, yeah. So, that's not, I mean, a, that's not derogatory.
So that being said, you know, and yeah, if you can get the recognition and you're on a film like that that wins an Oscar, you're never going to get up on stage. But if you had, but I think that, you know, the last thing I'll say to this, it's all about the stars.
Yep.
It's all about the stars saying, you know what, if we win, we're going to take care of you.
And shout out the let the stars do the same thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there are PAs that are literally attached to their hip called first team PAs. And they are the ones that are getting them food, getting them water, making sure they're there. They're coming back to and from their trailers on time. Shout out the PAs that, you know, I think that's another thing. Like, the actors should too. Now, the first time that I really saw that happen was Billy Bob Thornton won, I think it was a Golden Globe for, oh my God. It's the
Sling Blade?
No, Goliath.
Oh,
it
okay.
It was for his TV show, Goliath.
Okay.
And he shouted out, unfortunately, it was a PA that passed away.
Oh.
But he kind of started the precedent of bringing that to light. The talent, if you really appreciate what we do, then shout them out, being like, you know what? Thank you to the PAs who were there helping me get my lunch, making sure I was on set on time, making sure that, you know, we were, you know, we got the tents that we needed to keep warm. You helped us get through our day, and we appreciate that. I think that should be the next press. That should be also the precedent set is that too, because you know what? It will educate more people about what we do.
Yeah. Okay. I totally agree with you wholeheartedly. So let's move to supporting actress. Now, this one is very interesting, and we'll get to it in a couple of minutes, that why it's interesting. So you have Angela Bassett for Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, Hong Chiu for The Whale, Kerry Condon for Banshees of Inisherin, Dolly DeLong for Triangle of Sadness, Jamie Lee Curtis for Everything Everywhere All at Once, and Carey Mulligan for She Said. Now, let me ask you this. Who do you think is the favorite in this category? And we'll get to why it's interesting as soon as you're done. Who do you think is the favorite?
Honestly, with the role that it's going, I wouldn't be surprised if it's Jamie Lee Curtis. I think it's going to be between Jamie Lee Curtis and Kerry Condon. I think they're both insanely talented and strong performances. And also I think it's a three-way, actually. I think it's a Kerry Condon, Jamie Lee Curtis, and Carey Mulligan. I think those are going to be the three that are going to ultimately be duking it out in the results themselves.
Okay. It's going to be interesting because, you know, it's going to be fast. I mean, Oscar nominations come out in less than a week, and we're definitely going to cover that here on the channel. But, you know, I think the two that everybody is looking at right now is the two, you know, Angela Bassett is probably, and I'm going to say probably, but it's still wide open, probably the front runner. If Kerry Condon wins the BAFTA, it's a whole new game. I, you know, Hong Xiu, of course, you know, it's interesting. She was in another film this year that I loved, and that was The Menu. So I'm really glad to see she's getting some recognition. And Kerry Mulligan, she said, I mean, we were just talking about that a couple of minutes ago. Jamie Lee Curtis, Everything Everywhere All at Once. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the, that's going to be an interesting race because, you know, we don't know where Michelle Williams is going to end up. Is she going to end up in Best Actress? And if she does, somebody else takes her spot, and we'll get to that in a couple minutes. So I think this is probably the only lock of the night, okay? And that's supporting actor. So you have Brendan Gleeson for Banshees, Barry Condon for Banshees, Ke-Huy Quan for Everything All at Once, Eddie Raymond, The Good Nurse, Michael Ward for Empire of Light, and Albert Shearer. I'm going to hit the actor for All Quiet on the Western Front. I think this is a lock. What do you think?
I think you're correct. Yeah, I think it's Keys Knight, and it's going to be Keys Knight through this whole thing. And I think we are going to be seeing him on the Oscar stage winning an award. And I think Brendan Fraser and Key are the Rocky stories of this whole thing, and it's beautiful to see. Now, funny enough, I've only seen Everything Everywhere All at Once one time, but I still revisit Key's speech at the end, just talking about being kind, and that struck to me because it's like, That's me. I've always been the positive. I've always looked at the positive on the upside. And that is how I survive. And I just love that speech at the end because it's like, just be kind. And I think that that's a message that... And it was funny. I was talking to my mom about this film. She watched it on the plane ride in November, when we were all coming back from Miami, and she said it was too weird for her, but she didn't see the ending. She didn't get to the ending with Key, and I'm about ready to send her that speech at the end and be like, it is weird. It is. It's probably one of the weirdest films ever nominated and ever going to be nominated at the Oscars, but the message is clear. And and funny enough, I worked on Electric State, which is going to have Key in it. And I'm trying to get on the film so I can be there on his last day when he films his last stuff for the film. I don't know if it's ever going to happen, but from everybody that I talk to on the set who are good friends of mine, they say he is just like that. He is just like... just as positive, asking the PAs if they need help with anything. And that makes my heart even more grow to having Key being an Oscar winner for this. And I think even for the BAFTAs, even winning a BAFTA, that sets a new precedent for Asian Americans as well in cinema. Keep it going. And again, I think it's great that he's going to win for a film that is probably the most far out film that you could ever think of that literally has had legs since March, almost a year. And it's like Top Gun Maverick too. Like it's like the Loch Ness Monster. You do not see those kinds of films. You don't see those legs on these films. And I think that's also, I think there's going to be a changing of that no matter where your film is situated, it still can be Oscar worthy and awards worthy, and it can still have that word of mouth almost a year later. Sorry.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I totally agree with you. And so this has just been one of those films that has just kept going and going and going.
Yeah.
Going. And it's fantastic to see. So we move on. Now let's get to the three big categories. Okay. And we're going to do best actress first. Okay. Leading actress. Okay. So Kate Blanchett, Viola Davis for The Woman King, Daniel Detweiler for Till, Ana de Armas for Blonde, Emma Thompson for Good Luck to You, Leo Grand, Michelle Yeoh for Everything Everywhere All at Once. Wow. What a eclectic bunch we have here. First of all, give me your thoughts and then tell me.
I think it's a lock. I think it's a lock for Michelle Yeoh. I think that this is the strongest group that we have right yet. And it is every end of the spectrum when it comes to films. We have a great representation within this nominations bracket. We have Ana de Armas, who's from I think she's from Argentina. We have Daniel Deadwire. We have Viola Davis. We have Michelle Yeoh. I think that is a great group to show that, you know, roles are evolving and we are not just having these lackluster roles for women of color. We are actually having strong female roles altogether.
Now, here's a question I got to ask. Of the six, which three or four? I mean, look, I would say this personally. It's a two-woman race between Kate Blanchett and Michelle Yeoh.
Okay.
That being said, you have three other spots.
Yep.
You have Ana de Armas, Daniela Detweiler for Till, and Viola Davis. And the only reason I don't include Emma Thompson in that is because she hasn't really, I won't say, she isn't, you know, as far as award season is concerned,
yeah,
it's more of, you know, okay. So I got to ask, which one do you think of those four remaining, which three do you think gets the nomination for the Oscar?
I think you're correct. I think, and that's the thing too, I got to watch Tar, and that's definitely going to be on. It's been a whirlwind of a year, and I keep hearing everybody is praising Blanchett for her. So I got to say, it's going to be, I think you're right. It's going to be between, I think, Kate Blanchett, Michelle Yeoh, and I'm going to be bold and say Daniel Deadwyler, maybe. I think... Yep. It's either going to be Daniel Deadwyler or Viola Davis in this.
And
I think both are very strong. And the thing that worries me about Daniel Deadwyler is I don't know if we, even as a white, like predominantly white, like academy and how it, and you know, with the lack of representation that is still happening within the academy, I don't know if we want to face that demon just yet with the subject matter that Till is addressing. So I think that's going to be the biggest thing that's going to be against Daniel Deadwyler, even though it's a phenomenally heartbreaking performance. I think that's going to be the biggest issue against that. You know, we're going to have to face it head on at some point, but I think it would be a bold statement to have her nominated, and as well as Viola.
Well, I was just going to say Anadarmus, because this would be the first time in recent memory that I can think of, and maybe, you know, I go back and look, this would be the first time you'd have a actress in an NC-17 film.
Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Look, I think you're going to have to break the mold at some point, whether it is...
Oh, my God, yeah. Any film should be able to be nominated, yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Either you're going to nominate somebody like a Daniel Detweiler for Till, or, okay, you're going to nominate somebody like an Ana de Armas for Blonde, an NC-17 film.
Yeah.
I don't see it happening both in 1 year. That isn't going to happen, okay? That would just rock the Academy.
Things have happened. True. Like, you know, we didn't at the beginning of the race. I mean, I was a Parasite stan throughout the whole thing, and that's who I hitched my ride on. I wish I betted on the Oscars, because I would have won a lot of money betting on Parasite. Yeah. But wilder things have happened. And with how crazy these last 3 years have been, 4 years since Parasite have been, I wouldn't bet against any of that happening. Yeah. So, you know, and if the Academy wants to make a wave, that's exactly – I didn't think about the fact that Blonde, it was NC-17. Yeah. I forgot about that. So, yeah, that's another – that, as I said, crazier things have happened. Yeah. And I think that would be – and also Argentinian. I think she's from Argentina too. So that would also be another great precedent to set. But also I think also Javier Bardem's wife.
Yeah.
Penelope Cruz. She's been nominated, right?
Yeah.
So, but still that would still be a great precedent to set, to have somebody else, another woman of color, you know.
Yeah.
Any of them. Great. And I think that's.
So let's move on. We got two left. So we got Best Actor. This one is, once again, it's an interesting group. We have Austin Butler for Elvis. We have Colin Farrell for Banshees. We have Brendan Fraser for The Whale. We have Daryl McCormick for Good Luck, Leo Grand. Paul Mescal for After Sun. And Bill Knightley for Living. I got to say that there are three there that, well, at least two there. Okay. After Sun is, so this is one of those categories that I think that there are at least three locks that are guaranteed nominations. Okay. And that is Austin Butler, Colin Farrell, and Brendan Fraser. Those three are locked in. Now, if you want to say that, you know, Bill Knightley, who has been getting the nominations as of late, put him in there. So the other two, Paul Mescal and Daryl McCormick, probably not. So here is my question. Number one, who do you think gets the fifth slot? And number two, who do you think wins Oscar night?
Well, let's go. Who gets the fifth slot? I think
Austin gets the fifth slot.
I think Austin's, you're right, Austin will get nominated, Colin will get nominated. I do think
Brendan's a lock Fraser, too.
I think Brendan should be a lock. I think Bill Nye should definitely be a lock.
Okay, so that being said, four out of the five are taken. Who would be your fifth person to put
in there? I think After Sun should get something from this, because I got to see bits and pieces of After Sun, and Paul Mescal's performance is great. And I think shedding a light a little bit on mental illness would be a big would be a big win as well. And I'd be interested to see how that all turns out. So, yeah, I think Paul Mescal, you know, has a stronger chance.
I would tend to agree with you. Okay. However, if you look at the past, I don't know, 5, 6, 10 years, going back to Silver Linings Playbook, the Academy has had a track record where they could very easily have, as you put it, put a light on it.
Oh, no. I don't know, shied away from it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And whether it's Silver Linings Playbook, whether it's, you know, I mean, A Star Is Born with alcoholism,
yeah,
with
yeah,
whatever it is, they don't like to take these kind of films. They could be the most powerful things in the world. But the problem becomes that they don't like to put a light on it. Now, I agree with you. I think
yeah,
they should.
Oh, yeah. I think.
But what they will do and what they should do is two totally different things.
I think Austin could win. I think Austin and Colin are the strongest out of on it. And that's the thing, too. That's a very strong category to have. Heart of Hearts, I would think Brendan Fraser should win. Because I don't know if I'm going to see The Whale, because I've heard it just wrecks you. And it's, you know, it's not easy to watch at all. So that might be what holds me back from seeing it. But I'm a big Brendan Fraser fan. And I think from all I've heard, his performance is great. I don't know who could win this, dude.
I think that the Critics' Choice win absolutely moves him forward in the race. He's back in this. Okay.
Yeah.
Moreover than that, though. So who would you put in that fifth slot? Let me ask you this. I know this is an unpopular thing to say.
I think it's Paul. I think it's Paul behind Bill.
Okay.
I think it's Paul Mescal.
So Tom Cruise,
I don't know if Dan. I never saw Good Luck to You, Leo Grand.
I don't think a lot of people have.
Yeah, and that's a shame because it's, you know, it was a Sundance darling film that a lot of people liked at Sundance in 2021. So I think that's a very sad thing for it to happen. But I think Paul Mescal could be that fifth slot for sure. Okay. But also, who knows? There could be somebody else that comes out of left field that you're like, oh my God, like that's a perfect choice.
I know it's probably an unpopular choice with a lot of people. Don't be shocked if Tom Cruise makes it in there.
Don't be shocked
on Oscar nomination day if Tom Cruise is his last nomination.
I think I've said this before. That's who I'm. It's gonna be between Everything Everywhere All at Once and Top Gun Maverick are gonna be those films that I've had my horses hitched to, and if Tom Cruise wins for Top Gun Maverick.
Oh, he won't win, but he'll get nominated.
But I will say this. Crazier things have happened.
No, you're right.
So watch out. I think that would be a great start to the year to have somebody like Tom win for a role that, as a Top Gun fan, I wasn't expecting it to be
a Tom Cruise wins. I think if Tom Cruise wins, this is going to be more of an appreciation Oscar.
The reason I say that, I can't.
No. I don't like it either. But
I don't think it's an appreciation.
He's been nominated three times already. Magnolia, Born on the 4th of July, Rain Man. I've always said he's a better dramatic actor than he's the action guy. Everybody knows him from Top Gun, Mission Impossible. You know, and look, he can do sci-fi, Edge of Tomorrow, War of the Worlds. But the one thing, and the man's made billions, and look, he doesn't care about money. He doesn't care about fame. He just wants to make films the right way. It's kind of like, I'm going to compare it to Angela Bassett. Angela Bassett is a fantastic actress. She's been around the game for 30, 40 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. The one thing that's not on her mantle, Tyler, is an Oscar. I think if she wins, it's going to be not an appreciation Oscar. Because I think a lot of people out there would say, look, there are better acting performances. Because they, I won't say they dropped the ball in 2019 or 2018. But that being said, though, if Tom Cruise were to somehow miraculously pull this out, okay, this would be an appreciation Oscar over the past 40 years to say thank you for your service. Thank you for what you've done for cinema. Thank you for your – I know. I don't like it either.
No. But here's the thing. I don't think that that's a right way to look at it because I think Tom's – I'll compare it to this. I think his moment with Val Kilmer is the same kind of moment that happened in Captain Phillips at the end, where Tom Hanks just breaks down crying out of nowhere after being saved. Listen, I think his freaking performance with Val Kilmer and that speech alone is Oscar worthy enough and beautiful. I would say if this was maybe 10, 15 years from now and Tom hadn't won yet, maybe that would be an appreciation Oscar. But I think it blew me away. His performance as Maverick.
Yeah.
I just don't agree with the fact that it's not an appreciation. That wouldn't be an appreciation.
No, I know.
You know, I think the thing that would get him nominated would be that speech with him and Val Kilmer.
Because
it broke everybody. Mm-hmm. And even people that weren't huge Top Gun fans, I think were gravitated to that.
So let me ask you this real quick. So who do you think wins Oscar night? Do you think it's Austin Butler?
I think for me, I don't want to put a name to it. I don't want to predict it. I think Austin is a big. I think that'd be bad. I think that'd be amazing to see Austin win for sure. Yeah. I think it could, and I think his performance as Elvis is great. So, it is going to be, I think whoever wins is going to be very deserving of that win. And
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
I don't know. I think Austin is a good choice, though.
So, let's move to the last category. Okay. And one is the big one, best film. So, we have a stacked lineup here. All Quiet on the Western Front. Banshees of Inisherin, Elvis, Everything Everywhere All at Once, Tar. Those are your five. Now, most notably is the missing element there is the Fabelmans. Now,
I was going to say Top Gun Maverick as well.
And Top Gun Maverick. So, I don't know. What do you think of these five? Do you think they got it right?
I think they made good choices. I think they definitely made good choices. I wouldn't count out the Fabelmans at all or Top Gun Maverick. How many are supposed to be nominated for Best Picture this year?
10. So it is a hard 10.
I think Top Gun Maverick and I think Fabelmans are definitely going to get nominated. No doubt. And I think this doesn't deflate any of the power that those two films have. Out of this list, I'm gonna go with the Daniels. I think the Daniels have a chance to win a BAFTA for this.
Yeah. So it's gonna be interesting. I think all of these films are absolutely gonna get nominated for Best Picture. Okay. Yeah. If you now include the Fabelmans, if you now include, if you include that one, if you include All Quiet on the Western Front, okay, which, you know, I mean, it was there, but I mean, I still think that's not getting enough.
Oh no,
love.
It needs to be. So, it needs to be love more.
There are, I think, seven that are pretty much locks, and there's one here. So I think I won't say the locks, but the ones I think you can probably or be safe with. Is okay. This is for the Oscars now. Avatar: The Way of Water.
Okay.
Elvis, The Fabelmans, Tar, Top Gun, Banshees, Everything Everywhere All at Once. Those are the ones I think are safe. Okay. Now that's seven. Okay. So if that's seven, who takes 8, 9, and 10?
Oh my God, that's a good choice. That's a great question to have.
I mean, I have a couple of ideas.
What's your suggestions?
So it's all going to depend on how well it does. I think RRR is going to definitely win Best Original Song. This is coming out of nowhere. I mean, I think before, you know, before I would have said it was Hold Your Hand, but Lady Gaga has an Oscar. I would have said it's the, you know, the Rihanna
but I
song.
Think Hold Your Hand is a good, I think that could be second place
right.
in the Oscar vote for right. sure. A so, tight second up there.
So Rihanna, I think RRR is definitely going to get nominated.
Yeah, I think you're
win.
Right.
I would be, but if that's the only one it gets, I don't know if it's going to make it into Best Picture. So
as I said, though, crazier
said,
things
no,
have happened.
You're right, Tyler.
And it's
that
like,
being said, now, if that's the case, if that's the only precursor, okay, then you look at something like The Woman King. Then you look at something like Afterlife. Then you look at something like, then these are these pictures that go, okay, well, we haven't really given enough love.
What film?
Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. So there are definitely some, you know, there is definitely some wiggle room here. So of, let's say, the five or six I just named, who
what was
you
the
put
one after
there?
With what was the one that you said Life
after After Sun?
Oh, After Sun, After
yeah,
Sun. Yeah,
so,
yeah. I think that could be. I think After Sun could get nominated for Best Picture. I don't see that as being too far out. I don't know if Wakanda Forever has the Best Picture. Unfortunately. And that's another thing. I gotta watch Wakanda Forever. I missed out on that
well,
one,
and
I'll watch it in
February.
Here's
an interesting thing too. Let's talk about this real quick. If Angela Bassett, I mean, because all in things are probably going to say she's going to get nominated,
which would be amazing.
If she doesn't win, let's just say it's a, you know, let's say it's a Jamie Lee Curtis, let's say it's a Kerry Condon, let's say it's somebody else that wins. Does Black Panther even get nominated?
I don't see, and that's the thing too. I think from all that I've heard about Wakanda Forever, I keep hearing people say that Black Panther 2018 was a more stronger film than Wakanda Forever. So I don't know if it's going to get nominated. Now, I do see it as maybe like an honoring of Chadwick Boseman, but I don't know. And I don't think one equals the other. I don't think one has to be there for the connection to happen for something else to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I think Angela Bassett could win.
Yeah.
And the stuff that I have seen of her performance, I think she's the strongest performance in the film.
And we're not even talking about, listen, there's something else to keep in mind here. We're talking about precursors. There has never been an actor or an actress. I mean, yes, they've won Under the Line, Below the Line. There has never been a Marvel film to have an actor or actress a win above the line. Now, guys, let me say one thing. When we talk about above the line and below the line, we're talking about acting and directing and best picture and everything else. below the line is something like editing, cinematography, sound. So, but Angela Bassett, there has never been, the Academy has never awarded a Marvel film above the line. So there is a multitude of different storylines and narratives here that I think are going to be fascinating for next week.
But here's the thing, though. I don't know to nominate Wakanda Forever for Best Picture just to get... I don't think of Wakanda Forever as an Oscar-worthy Best Picture nomination. I really don't. Like, the Marvel stands will say every goddamn movie that... And also, please don't come for me, Marvel stands. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can take you guys on a little bit, but as somebody that has worked on Marvel projects, I think the performances could be nominated, but I haven't seen it all together be a win. Now, Ruth Bader Carter should probably get nominated for costume. I would be all in on that because she is great at what she does. So give it to that. I would love that option. So yeah. Give it to that.
So, but I mean,
I just don't see it as being like an all around that would take out some other film. Mm-hmm. I might get hate for that.
Yeah,
but no. It's gonna be like I would be cool to see all my friends that worked on it be able to say that they worked on an Oscar nominated film like that. But I don't know.
And this is what makes the races so. So exciting, guys, because when we have all these different things.
When is the Oscar nominations?
Less than a week. Next week. So this is what makes it so much fun and interesting, and we can talk about all this because you've got the BAFTAs and the SAGs and the PGAs and the DGAs, and we don't, you know, we can try and predict whatever we think is going to happen, but it's only going to be that time that it's going to be, okay, this is what's actually going to happen until next week. And then we can put our money on those five people. I want to thank Tyler for being
Dude,
with me. Because
always
he
a pleasure.
Has definitely provided some fantastic insight. And he will be coming back on Sunday night for us as myself. As I said, myself, Kyle, and Destiny are going to be doing a breakdown, and we're going to critique it about the brand new episode of The Last of Us.
Get ready, guys. If you haven't watched it, watch it.
I can't, you know, emphasize enough. We have a huge 2023 coming up for you guys. We have, you know, Last of Us streams that just started. Okay. And, you know, we're a little less than a month away from the new Ant-Man movie. We've got Creed around the corner, March 3rd. We've got a multitude of you know, spoiler casts coming up for you right here on the channel. So as that says, hit that like and hit that subscribe button, okay? I want this to get out to the masses so everybody can see it. I have a great time talking about films. Kyle, when he's here, has a great time talking about films. Tyler is in the business, and I know he loves talking about films.
Hey.
And we're gonna get this out to as many people as possible. But seriously, hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and please drop us a comment in the comments section. You know, who do you think is gonna win Best Actor? Who do you think is gonna win Best Actress? What do you think is gonna win Best Picture? Okay, I'll get back to you. Kyle will get back to you, and we'll definitely talk about, you know, all this stuff. Give us your predictions about next week on The Last of Us. What do you think is going to happen? So we've got a ton of stuff coming up for you on the channel this year. And so I can't wait to bring it to you. Kyle can't wait to bring it to you. I have a ton of stuff lined up, as I keep saying. I want to put together a roundtable. It's a little more... informative and serious side. We'll talk about that at a later date, but, you know, stay tuned for that. And stay tuned for all the great stuff we got coming up on the channel. Okay, guys. As I said to him, once again, thank you for joining me. It was an absolute blast to hear your insight and hear your knowledge about the industry and everything else. Kyle will be back, and he'll be back on next week, and we will be doing some shows. So as we close today, I wanted to just say one thing, and that's we have some very interesting videos coming up for you guys in the coming days. One of them is going to be the top five film franchises of all time, what we think are the top five film franchises of all time. Another one is going to be John Williams, top five scores for John Williams, probably top seven. He's going to be celebrating his 92nd birthday. And just amazing. I mean, he's been working with Steven Spielberg, the GOAT, for 50 years. So we've got that video coming up, and we got a ton of other stuff on the channel. So he is Tyler. I am David. And you have been watching Real Talks. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye, guys.